Anna Mirabel either. It was a lot safer than trying to come up with a convincing aristocratic lineage out of thin air. It was, thankfully, a neutral name that had no obvious connotations, aristocratic or otherwise. Unlike the rest of my dinner companions, I couldn't trace my lineage back to the flotilla's arrival, and it was more than likely that the Mirabel name had arrived on Sky's Edge half a century after that. In aristocrat terms, I was posing as a parvenu lout, but no one would have been gauche enough to allude to that. They were all long-lived, tracing their lineages not just back to the flotilla, but to the passenger manifest, with only one or two intervening generations, and it was perfectly natural to assume that I possessed the same augmented genes and access to the same therapeutic technologies. But while the Mirabels probably had arrived on Sky's Edge sometime after the flotilla, they hadn't brought any kind of germline longevity fix with them. Perhaps the first generation had lived a longer than normal human lifespan, but that advantage had not been passed to their offspring. I didn't have the money to buy it off the shelf, either. Kawea had paid me adequately, but not so well that I could afford to be stung by the ultras to that extent. And it almost didn't matter. Only 1 in 20 of the planet's population had the fix anyway. The rest of us were mired in a war, or scraping a living in the war's interstices. The main problem was how to survive the next month, not the next century. Which meant that the conversation took a decidedly awkward turn as soon as the subject matter turned to longevity techniques. I did my best to just sit back and let the words flow around me, but as soon as there was any kind of dispute, I was pushed into the role of adjudicator. "Tana will know," they said, turning to me to offer some definitive statement on whatever had provoked the stalemate. "It's a complicated issue," I said more than once. Or, "Well, obviously there are deeper issues at stake here." Or, "It would be unethical of me to speak further on this topic, I'm afraid. Confidentiality agreements and all that. You do understand, don't you?" After an hour or so of that, I was ready for some time on my own. I stood from my table, made my excuses and left, stepping up the spiral staircase which led to the observation deck above the habitation and dining levels. The prospect of shedding the aristocratic skin pleased me, and for the first time in hours I felt the tiniest glow of professional contentment. Everything was in hand. When I reached the top, I had the compartment servitor prepare me a guindado. Even the way the drink fogged my normal clarity of mind was not unpleasing. There was plenty of time to become sober again. It would be at least 7 hours before I needed an assassin's edge. We were ascending quickly now. The elevator had accelerated to a climb rate of 500 kilometers per hour as soon as it cleared the terminal. But even at that rate, it would still have taken 40 hours to make it to the orbit terminal, many thousands of kilometers above our heads. However, the elevator had quadrupled its speed once it no longer had to punch through atmosphere, which had happened somewhere during our first course. I had the observation deck to myself. The other passengers, when they had finished dining, would disperse through the 5 compartments above the dining area. The elevator could comfortably carry 50 people and not appear crowded, but there were only 7 of us today, including myself. The total trip time was 10 hours. The station's revolution around Sky's Edge was synchronized to the planet's own daily rotation, so that it always hung exactly over Nueva Valparaiso, dead above the equator. They had star bridges on Earth, I knew, which reached 36,000 kilometers high, but because Sky's Edge rotated a little faster and had a slightly weaker gravitational pull, synchronous orbit was 16,000 kilometers.